Let's do it.
Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. It's African American Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. The main man, Marvin Rohn, and the crew. Come to you live. We got community conversations today. We're coming to you live. We got something that we need to share, something to talk about, set our minds right, get on the right path, and that, just the way it's going down today, African American Empowerment, 365 days of better love for you and me, oh yeah, and as always, there is no greater love, there is no better love than for self and kind. No greater love. Again, welcome, brothers and sisters. Welcome to African American Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of you know what for you know who. And so what we want to do is continue to educate, inspire, motivate, and empower our people to do the work of working on ourselves. That is to love ourselves. That is to have the courage to be able to step out of a mindset that's been created for us and to step into love, step into peace, step into joy. Step into happiness, step into oneness, right? That oneness that returns us to our original position of greatness and authority over the situations that we find ourselves in this country. How do we do that? We do it through the pillars of the peace concept and the peace process. You're probably saying to yourself, if you haven't heard the show, Marvin, what is the peace concept? Well, it's really simple. It's being able to create peace within our lives and in our communities through a process that have us to look at certain aspects of being able to navigate the system that we live in as African Americans. Here it is. P, I'm spelling peace. Politics. We need a political agenda. African Americans around the country and internationally, right, need a political agenda to have us to look at the politics where we are, how we can utilize politics as an effective means to get the resources that we need to develop ourselves, to engage better, right, to build those institutions that define our own reality and to become positive and productive in our communities. It's being able to create a mindset of now utilizing the systems that are in place to better affect how we live wherever we are. Next is E, which is vitally important, economics, understanding economics and capitalism, how the system works, money management, finances, how all these systems work, even the tax system, right? We got to understand how these systems work and then how to effectively utilize them for our best interests, right? How to navigate capitalism and how not to necessarily become capitalist, but be able to capitalize on capitalism as we continue to understand how money flows and where money goes. And if money goes back to us and flow back to us, then we can continue to create and define our own realities. Next is the A. This is personal now, so point at yourself and say, this is for me. It's athletics. It's health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition, right? Mental health, physical health, and emotional health. And these are the areas that we need to individually focus on. What is the status or the standard of your mental, physical, and emotional health? Are you eating right? Are you pushing away from the table? Are you getting away from those processed and refined sugary foods that are really hurting and harming us, right? We lead the league. We lead the world in health disparities. And we could do something about that if we continue to do the work of magnifying those issues, not complaining about it, but being effective at remedying those situations that harm us physically, mentally, and emotionally. Next is the C. Culture, relevant cultural programs like this one, and really look at how we can continue to engage ourselves to better perform in activities that's going to help us, right, look at ourselves and become better at who we are. That is being able to educate ourselves, our families and our friends and our communities and do the work of working on ourselves. And lastly, it's education. It's a comprehensive education that really have us to look at all of these areas and to improve, to refine and define ourselves each day, every day, one day at a time. And that's just how it works. And now it's time for the Stan Macklin moment. Be right back. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brother Stan is right. Boy, oh boy, do we desperately need those systems. We need those systems, right? Stop trying to get in to fit in. We need to be able to have those institutions that define our own reality so we can continue to prosper. We're talking about prosperity. We're talking about abundance. And we're talking about improving ourselves. And we have to do that work of working on ourselves. And now, it's my favorite segment of the show. It's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with my brother, Brother George. You got to bring it today, brother. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Bring it. What?
Right here. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. I really appreciate the fact that we're able to be on the show live at the Glasgow Center, a teen center for the church, and be able to talk about the community needs, the things that we need in the community. And just wanted to give a little background, since this is a special show, on the Kwanzaa and Willie Lynch segment. The Kwanzaa segment, you know, was really started because Malana Karenga, he did a great deal of research into African culture so that he could in some way merge that with the African-American experience. And he came up with Kwanzaa. And I don't want to call Kwanzaa a holiday because it's not really a holy day. It's not dealing with religion or anything like that, like many holidays are. So I want to call it, he put together a 7-day time period that was after Christmas, and it's not a challenge to Christmas because Christmas is designed for the Christians to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. And that's what it's for, and that's a religious holiday. So I don't think he was trying to touch that. But I do think that he was trying to create an idea in our minds where we would constantly be in thought of the necessary principles that were a part of the cultures that we originated in West Africa and in the Americas as well. He put together Kwanzaa. And so today, the Kwanzaa principle for today is Kuumba, which is creativity. To do always as much as we can in the way we can in order to leave our community more beautiful and beneficial than we inherited it. And normally I read another section because I read out of this small book called Practicing Kwanzaa Year Round. And it has a lot of interesting information that's in relationship to those principles. And today, Kuumba, depicting a snake climbing a rafa palm, this symbol represents ingenuity, excellence, and performance of great feats. Observing the most ordinary details of nature has inspired poets, musicians, philosophers, and scientists to make wonderful creations, inventions and discoveries. We too can be inspired to new ways of thinking simply by paying attention to the natural world around us. And y'all know that I love that topic because I love it when Dr. Bridges did that lecture called The Natural Creation, which is a wonderful lecture that you should listen to. Now, the Willie Lynch segment was put together because I don't know if many of us know, but we are the Moors, and we existed. We were a very functional, highly literate, educational group of people that we did a great deal of reading, research, and we were the researchers and readers of the world just before the enslavement period. And so in order to take that away from us, it made us do the opposite. They made us so we couldn't read, so we couldn't write, so we couldn't research, so we couldn't do any of these things. So the purpose of the Willie List segment is to get us to think about getting back to doing those things again, using our putting our scientific minds back to work and rebuilding ourselves as we have done in the past. Now, today, I'm going to read from a book, and it's an ancient book, and I've been reading from this book for the past 2 or 3 weeks, and it's the teachings of Ptah Hotep, which is the oldest book in the world. Now, what's interesting about this book is that he's focusing on everyday flaws in the characters of the people that were in our community at that time. And he was a wise man of his day, and he was giving advice to people to make the society better. So today's lesson is going to be, I'm going to be, if you want to have perfect conduct, to be free from evil, then above all, guard against the vice of greed. Greed is the grievous sickness that has no cure. There's no treatment for it. It embroils fathers, mothers, and the brothers of the mother. It parts the wife from the husband. Greed is a compound of all the evils. It is a bundle of all hateful things. That person endures whose rule is righteousness, who walks a straight line, for that person will leave a legacy by such behavior. On the other hand, the greedy has no tune. Now, that's I thought that was very interesting, you know, because greed is one of the major problems that we have in the society that we live in now. Even in the country that we live in now, greed through capitalism, that system, you know, and I just thought that it was interesting that those kinds of things were pointed out to the human beings of that time, because basically he was talking to the citizens of Kemet and not necessarily to the entire world. Now, that information might have traveled through the book, but in the beginning, he was talking about the society that was in Kemet. So, Brother Marvin, I hope that I did what you needed me to do, and I know that the question of the week is coming, so let's get to it.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. For the empowerment question of the week, and this is something to think about, what can we do today to start to changing the way our communities exist? What's the one thing today, brother? Give it to us.
Well, the one thing today is that we need to set up small learning centers for our youth, our youngest children, and we have to inspire them to become the great minds that they have, because man is mind. And so we need to instill that in our children, because right now our children feel like they have nothing to lose. And that's the only way that you can take another individual's life without any pain of conscience, like you're doing the right thing, is when you get confused as to how valuable that life is. Because that life could be, as the minister used to say, the answer to your prayers. And then you snuffed out the answers to your prayers. That one that will rise up and lead us, you know, down the path that will lead us out of the confusion and nonsense that we're in right now. You know, and so we need to start setting up institutions ourselves for our young people to begin to teach them and train them about with life skills and the different scientific avenues that they could travel down and use their mind, and even in the arts as well. So, brother, I hope that answers your question. I always say the same thing. We gotta get to our young people, man. Our young people, like 7, 8, and 9 years old, very young. Catch them then, and then you know it'll continue if you start there. So I hope that answers your question, brother.
Yes, sir, Brother George. It's very important that we do that work, that we lead, that we guide, that we teach, that we train, that we show our young people love and give them excellent examples of what that can be. So the work is up to us now. So make a commitment today that in your heart and in your mind that you're going to find some young people. But start with yourself first, thinking about how you think and how you operate and your habits and your ways to be able to now transform into an example for your people, for your community, for your children, and that they can look at you and know that that example will be the one that they can utilize to move forward in a very positive, peaceful, and productive way. So we're asking you to continue to do that work, to carry it on, because we need you. In this African-American community, in this day and time, we need help and we need each other. And the only way that we're going to be effective is that we link arms, we come together as a family in unity and harmony and continue to do that work of working on ourselves. It's African American Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. And now we're moving on to our next segment with Brother Booker. It's now time to become the one with Brother Booker. Let's go, Brother Booker. Let's do it. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. And we are stuck, all right. We keep it around.
Bring it! What?
We rise here. We're not going anywhere. We rise here.
Ain't going nowhere. Brother Booker, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Good, Brother Marvin. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How is it out there on the left coast? How you feeling?
Oh, man. Oh, it's great, great, great. Lovely, lovely, lovely out here, man. Weather's fine out here on the beach and just relaxing this morning, you know, because it's a little after 11 here. So we're just chilling, you know, and getting ready to do some cooking and all those good things. But as I always said, to all the brothers and sisters within the sound of my voice, peace, brother, and peace, love, and happiness and all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So we're having a good time, brother, representing well. Let me get on with the one. We're down to number 9 now. And recapping, the number one is the one is honest with himself. The one loves himself. The one loves his people. The one believes in himself. The one believes in his people, even if they don't believe in themselves. The one always stands for what he knows is right, even if he has to stand alone. The one loves for his brother what he loves for himself. The one is a great communicator, and he knows how to listen. And now number 9, the one is not afraid to die for what is right. When you're standing for what is right, brother, and there have been many before us that have lost their lives standing up for what they know is right. It's so easy to say something and you know it's right, but then when the pressure comes on you, when you lose your job or threaten to lose your job or lose your loved one, threaten your loved one or lose your life, then a lot of us change and don't continue to stand for what we know is right out of fear, and basically self-hatred plays a major role in it. But when you know something is right, the one is going to stand for it, even if it cost him his life. And I like to tie that analogy to the Jesus Christ story. That's why I said Jesus Christ was the one. He was one that was the one because he knew what was coming. He knew what was going to happen to him, even by his own people, if he stood for what he knew was right. But if it's right, what else are you going to do? You have to stand for what you know is right, even if it costs you your life, brother. That's number 9 in the characteristics and qualities of the one, brother. As always, thanks for the opportunity, Brother Marvin.
Thank you, Brother Booker. Thank you for sharing, and we appreciate
you're doing the segment on being the one. Let's continue to apply those principles to our lives so we can make a difference in our communities right where we are. Thank you, Brother Booker. I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
All right.
Yes, sir. Peace.
Peace. Thank you. All right. Now, as we move on today, we're going to start our community conversation today. And today is all about really looking at changes, right, and having a conversation from the grassroots level, right? 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. Or you can hit us on Slido today, slido.com, S-L-I-D-O.com. The number today is 214-849-55. Let me give you that to you again and slow it down, Marvin. 214-849-55, slido.com. Slide on over there. And put your comment in, but you can also, again, call the call in, dial in line 845-277-9250. So let's get this conversation started. So we're at a community festival today, and we thought it would be appropriate to really look at how we can now discuss from a grassroots level what those things that we need to do as a community, as a family of people of color. So here's the great idea. It is to be able to think about African Americans, specifically and particularly, right, and the needs that we have within our communities wherever we are. And I think if you go to Oakland, if you go to San Diego, if you go to Richmond, if you go to Dallas, if you go to Houston, if you go to Liberty City in Florida, and if you go to Baltimore, Detroit, the situations on the ground are pretty much the same. Wherever you go for us, there's poverty, there's violence, there's crime, there's drugs, and there's dysfunctional families. Now, that's across the board in a segment of our population. And the way we have to look at things, if one of us are hurting, all of us are hurting. If one of us are struggling, all of us are struggling. And so we have to get away from the individualized thing where we're thinking that, oh, we're on our own and we could do this by ourselves. It's collective work and responsibility. And it's so vital that it is now time for our work that we have to do together to improve our neighborhoods, to improve our community, to improve the schools that our kids go to. And we're going to have to do that for ourselves. Who is going to commit to that work, and what kind of work needs to be done as we continue to explore the needs of our communities, our families? What do our men need? What do our women need? What do our girls need? What do our boys need? What do our communities need? And how can we begin to coalesce and think about ideas about transitioning from one style of doing things on an individual level to a collective level where we're collecting ourselves in communities across the country to network together to make change. So for me, I'm thinking about being able to have that conversation about what those needs are, right? And how can we transition into discovering what those needs are and then doing something about it? See, it's one thing to have a conversation about it. That's the first step. But the second step is to be able to say, how can we begin to have those necessary conversations and commit to change? Where does that change start? The change start with having a mission, right? Having a concrete way of doing things, but also being able to say, this is what we need as a family, as a community, to be able to be effective at having those things that we need to do, right? Those things have to be imperative and have to be in the forefront of our minds in order to achieve the goals that we need. We were brought here on slave ships against our will. That's just a fact. We came over here together, right, on ships, individual ships that came over here. We had to create lives for ourselves. We had to create a new reality in oppression and in enslavement. And now that we're out of enslavement, we have to now begin to break the chains off of the mental enslavement, right, that emotional enslavement, that thing that drive a wedge between us and our community members, that thing that drive a wedge between ourselves and our relationships with our husbands, wives, and spouses, and children. What is going to be the thing that makes the difference in our community? It has to be our men, it has to be our women, and it has to be our systems. What systems are we using now to change the constructs and the mindsets? And that's what we're going to talk about today. So with me, I got Brother George. He'll be involved in the conversation. I got Brother James. I got Sister Jackie. And I got another brother over here. What's your name, brother? Brother Antonio. We're all in the room. We're going to have a community conversation. Everybody can jump in where they want to. And hopefully, Brother Antonio, you can come up a little bit closer. so everybody can hear you. But we're going to talk about just the community conversation from a grassroots level, right? The people on the ground, what does it look like, and how can we begin to be more effective at getting change? Again, 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. And at slido.com, you can go over there. If you don't want to call in, you can always make a comment that way. So we'll start with myself posing a question to the community. That is, what is our greatest need, right? What do you feel as an African-American, wherever you are listening, what do you feel are our greatest needs? And if so, how do we then achieve accomplishing the goals of meeting our needs? I'm going to start with you, Brother George, and then I'll go over to Brother James. What are our greatest needs, brother?
Our greatest needs right now, I would think, is to get our community united again, to get our community back to being family-oriented, because it seems like the breakdown in the family structure has led to this this escalating spree of violence amongst ourselves. And we have to figure out a way to solve that issue. And I think that it was suggested many years ago that we should have been placed in a situation of reparation, and different responsible organizations should have been setting up institutions to help to resolve that issue. Because when you study the history of African Americans here in, I like to call us Moors, in the Americas, when you study that history, you'll find that our family structure was not bad. Back in the 1920s and right after the enslavement period, our family unity system was not bad. We were doing pretty good. We had a greater marriage success rate than the different groups that were here besides us. And you know, but over time, it would appear that there were plans put into effect to destroy the family structure, which led to a great deal of progress for us in the 1920s, and that structure was destroyed. It put us in a situation where you have particularly young black males, that our young men want to kill each other, and it's like it's no pain of conscience, and the number being killed just seems to grow, and we have to do something with courage. We have to use courage. That's what Amos Wilson said. He said that one of our greatest issues as a people, not just the black man, was that our cowardice to challenge the system to help us change the things that are necessary to be changed in our community. We got to stop trying to be concerned with how we could fix everybody else. And we need to be more concerned, because we're in the worst state in this country than any other group of people. Because you could say, well, what about the Latinos? No, the Latinos stick and work together, though. They may have some issues of gang violence amongst them, but they work together. You'll see them with massive companies downtown building skyscrapers and building homes and different things like that. But you don't see that with us. And our skill level, based on our history, is greater than any other people. We are the Masons. Mm-hmm. That's where the Masonic Lodge came from. So we're the builders of civilization. You see, so it's not that we don't have it there. It's in our DNA. So we have to do something to rekindle that spirit of learning and of building and of changing society and making it a better place for human beings to exist in. And we have to, and to me, like I said earlier, the beginning is with our young children. And we got to start, we have to start our own institutions. We have to start our own institutions that are not controlled by other people. Because their fear is that they will experience the wrath of God because of what they did to us. And they think we're trying to get them back. No, I think that we're more interested in trying to get ourselves back on the right path that we was once on, more than trying to repay them for what they did to us. But they're so fearful of that and so fearful of the lies that have been told in the past that can't even be proven. And those kinds of lies and those kinds of people are put in front of our children in the school system. Our children are forced to learn lies. And we appear as though we don't have the courage to come forward in mass and say, enough is enough. That's it. If you don't want to properly teach our young people, then help us to set up our own school system here. The government owes us more than any other people on this planet because of the destruction that has been done to us. No other people have fallen as far as we've fallen or been beaten down as far as we've been beaten down. And now it's time for us to get up off of the mat and begin to rebuild. And we have a history of rebuilding. We've done this more than once. Been a fallen empire and then rebuild one that's better than the one that was before that. Just read your history and you'll find that out. But Brother Marvin, you know, that's my little bit. I know that you might call on me later, but.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Those are really great points, right? And so we're going to have to, and I agree, start with our children, right? We need some things, right? But we need ourselves first, right? And this mission that we're reaching out, it starts with you and me, right? We got to really look at ourselves, our issues, our concerns, the things that hurt us, the things that pain us, and the things that make us do what we do, and how these systems are working inside of us to make us respond and react and treat each other the way that is, and that is the condition. And so here at the NAAEA, we say disrupt the program. So there are certain programs that's running inside of you, right, through your experiences that are making you behave in a certain way. And we have to be able to examine ourselves, take a look at ourselves, and then do restorative work to be able to heal and then become productive and peaceful in our lives. Now I'm going to turn it over to Brother James. The question is, what is our greatest need? Brother James.
Thank you, Brother Marvin. I appreciate it greatly. I appreciate you all for having me here today. So I just got a couple of talking points I wanted to really speak about. Starting first with real conversations around the street code. In our communities, we have to have real conversations about this thing that we call the street code. So many of us have been conditioned by this game to think that wrong is right and right is wrong, you know, and it's something that is running rampant through our communities for many years. When, you know, our youth are conditioned in a way where we consider those who make good grades as lames, those who run the streets, participate in criminal activity as the ones that are cool. We have to get back to flipping that, because going to school and being smart is actually a good thing. You know, not selling drugs, not running around the communities, not shooting, not robbing, not womenizing. Those things are things that are actually good. But let this culture tells us, it tells us that those are things that are all the things that lames do, right? And then also educating our youth that there is no street code. One of the biggest lies and deception is having people in the game think that there's actually a code that everybody lives by, when we all know criminal activity has no honor in it. And the minute someone can throw you under the bus, the minute you'll be thrown under that bus. You know, us as older individuals who have been in this game, it's very important for us to reach back and give the younger individuals the tools to deal with the conditioning that they're dealing with every day. It's also important for us to create more opportunity. We can't go back into communities, you know, acting as if we're these younger guys, fathers, and so on and so on. No, I'm not going to do that. But what I will do is show you that there's another way. I understand the game that you're fighting in, the gangs and the culture and all of that. I'm not going to tell you what to or what not to do, but let me show you there is another way. Because at the end of the day, whether or not we realize it, inside of these communities, we are competing with the dope man. Myself as a young individual to start selling crack and heroin at 13 years old, you know, we wanted money. We couldn't get no jobs or access to no income. So the first thing you do is you run out and you grab a pack. So the second piece I wanted to talk about was intentional economic opportunity for our youth. We have our youth here in the city of Richmond competing for the same low-income jobs as adults without education. That is really crazy right now for our youth, meaning you have adults going to jobs that are on the bus line. What are youth trying to get? Jobs that are on the bus line. You got adults going out to jobs that you don't have to have their education. What do you see youth going out to jobs without no education? And myself, I know from my personal experience as a young man, everyone wanted to do something nice for their little girlfriend or their community. Some of our youth actually have to take on the role of almost like a father figure role inside of their houses, providing for their brother, providing for their sister, helping their mother with the bills and so on and so on. So when you start to take on these roles, individuals that have what you deem to be good opportunities, you know, kind of shed a light on it and make you think it's the right thing, hence the dope man. So if you can't find no money one way, you're going to find some money another way, right? So then we get our youth to start to participate in criminal activity, which opens up a whole nother world. Opens up a whole nother world of violence, dropping out of school, and so on and so on. We were, at one point in time, in middle school, we had cars in middle school to the point where we had to park our cars outside of the school parking lot because they were towing our vehicles because they knew kids in middle school weren't old enough to be driving. But that was the culture we grew up in. 13, 14, 15 years old, we're making $500, $600 a day, some of us, when we were coming up in school. So school wasn't really enticing because I hear what you're saying, but I'm thinking about all this money I'm missing while I'm here actually in school, right? But also training. A lot of our youth don't know how to act on a job. We have to do things like workplace excellence to teach our people how to act on a job when they actually get a job, and particularly a job with some quality, right? Because the same culture inside of a McDonald's is not going to be the same culture inside of a corporate setting. So teaching them how to code switch, teaching them how to adapt to their environments and things like that. But also my third piece I wanted to talk about was also real conversation around the music industry. We have to hold the music industry more accountable for the poison that is pushing down to our people. When we look at cultures, right, you may have the baby boomers. They grew up on the cultures. It was love music. More kids were being born, right? When you come to my culture, it was a lot of drug dealing. All the guys in the music was telling us, sell drugs, get money. We destroyed our community at an alarming rate, right? We profited off of destroying individuals' lives. It didn't take me till I was about 28 to 30 years old to start to realize, in order for me to be successful, I have to destroy your household. That is a terrible culture. And so often when you're involved in it, you don't see what's going on because you almost daggone me a pharmaceutical sorcerer. So you're casting spells on houses. So currently right now, I talk to a lot of the older guys that are about 35 or better who say, you can't tell these young guys what to do. They're not listening. They're trying to do their own thing. Well, I ask all of my older guys who can hear my voice, who was it that destroyed their households? That was us that destroyed their households. So a lot of us was going into those houses when they was kids. They looking at us like uncle, big uncle, whatever. But in reality, we're taking their parents' last $50 or $100 that's really needed for food. We're giving them crack. We're giving them heroin and things like that. Now we're destabilizing their households. So who are responsible for a lot of the things that we see out in the streets going on right now? We are. Because that's what being a real nigga was all about, right? That saying of I'm a real nigga. But when you look at what they consider to be a real nigga, a person that destroys his community is real. I'm willing to kill you over nothing. That's being real. That's not being real to me at all. But we are also dealing with a music industry that is pushing this culture at an alarming rate. They don't push more positive music. They push music that talks about destroying your community, killing each other, and things like that. But you got to place some of the blame on that too as well. I know parenting matter, but also as well, they shouldn't get a free pass of the poison that they're allowing to come to our youth ears. When we look at a lot of the youth walking around in the communities this day and time, what you see a lot of them with headphones in their ear. So they're constantly being programmed all day long. You have youth that are laying in their beds being programmed for their feet even hit the carpet, some even the concrete project floors. How do you compete with that? Right? Before you even get a chance to talk to your child, somebody's already programming them in their bed. Me being an individual whose son is now doing prison time, this hits home for me as well, because some of those things that I did in the streets, those curses reach back and find your kid, and that's a tough pill to swallow. Right? You can't look at a situation biased because it's your child. Well, what were you doing to somebody else's? And until we get to the point where we start to care more about each other, more about our communities, and more about our youth, we would still be in the same predicament. I also like to say to all the guys that were out there selling drugs 100 miles an hour, just consider what it is that you're doing to that youth that's in that household of destabilizing their home. Yes, you could be getting a big bag. Yes, the money feels good. Yes, you're rolling in the good cars, chains, women, all those nice things that you get with that game, right? But look at the future and how you're destroying it. We're destabilizing homes, and in order for you to be successful, you have to destroy a person. That's not the game. That's not what's being a real nigga. So I'll stop and I'll pass it to Brother Marvin right now so he can continue on with this nice conversation.
All right. Wow. Brother James, that's great. And I think we have to really look at those things, right? I think the media outlets, right? I think the music industry, like you talked about, we have to be able to navigate around those, right? Put systems in place that really have us to look at what we need to do and how we're going to do it to kind of change that culture, right? What we need to do to get in front of our kids, right? Get in front of their minds and be able to examine that, right? And it's these conversations. So a lot of people are talking about, well, why we got to keep talking, why we got to keep talking about it? I think we have to raise these thoughts within our minds and begin to say, okay, let's have a dialogue about strategies, right? What are some things that we can do to have strategy sessions to come and sit down and say, okay, we know this industry is at play right now, at work, right, that is putting things in place in the minds and hearts of our young people. And then how do we begin to create strategies to develop mindsets and tactics that go about reversing those things that are really harming us, right? A lot of our people are scared of our young people. And so how do we get into a place where we can get in front of them, talk to them, teach them, train them, and develop them? I'm going to turn it over to Brother Antonio. All right, let's hear what he has to say. Brother Antonio.
Those are very profound points, James T., what you were saying. It's spot on. As someone who's an unabashed music fan of all genres, you know, I listen from oldies to things you think I wouldn't listen to sitting in this room, things obviously you're aware of. And I know not to go out and act those things out, but I realize how impressionable youth can be, because it was a time where I considered, you know, I could go out here and try some of these things too and failed miserably and went back to school. It wasn't for me, right? So, but I think as a culture, the most important thing that we have to do is look into the mirror and then also be willing to pivot as a collective. You know, a dollar does not circulate in our household or our community more than 6 hours. And, you know, adjacent communities, it's a week, it's a month, it's even longer than that. And that's why, you know, and much respect to those other communities, that's why you see, you know, the immigration population are able to come in and build communities out of thin air from scratch. They're communal. They circulate amongst each other their resources, their energy, their love even. And, you know, as complicated as the black community and the plights of the black community is, the solution is very simple. And I think Brother James touched on that quite a bit. And it's communication. It's getting into a room like we're doing now and speaking into existence the communities that we want to have. But more importantly, we have to do a better job of curating the dollar. The energy that we have, we can't allow our kids to put that into rap music and then receive the energy that it gives them back, because it puts a battery in their bag to go out and destroy themselves in their communities. But you listen to this music and goes out and kill somebody, they've killed two people, the person that killed themselves, right? So we lose fast in those manners. But you know, curating not just our dollar, but I think another thing that we have to do is curate our vote. And I'm past political parties because, you know, when I look back from the civil rights on, I don't see where the needle's been moved no matter where the vote has gone, right? And so we have either party. So this is not to single out anybody. This is the, really, I'm singling out Black America. I'm not talking, and that's another thing we have to do. We can't keep talking to all these other communities about what's wrong with our community, what we don't have, what we didn't do. No one's coming to save us, all right?
True.
So this is not a – this is a in-the-house conversation that we have to continue to have, and then action items have to come behind it. So curating that vote, are we voting for candidates that represent us, our best interests? Are we rallying to vote for those things like we did for presidents that look like us? What about ones that are in tune to our everyday struggles? You know, we'll vote for politicians based on what they say or the party that's aligned. Who's moving the needle forward in your community? Are you voting locally? You know, these are very simple things to do, and they're free. And so it has to go more, you know, you can always find a conversation about the Black Flight, and right behind that, you can always find a group of people looking to exploit it.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So we have to have real conversations about our community, because right now no one's in control. The Black community is the ATM. People come to it to pull out currency, and currency is not just money, it's votes, it's energy, it's attention, it's labor. And a lot of the times when we send those things outside of our community, they never come back. And a lot of times when we send our best, when we bootstrap and we build our best people out of our communities, we send them out and they never come back. Everything is exporting in the Black community, and it's not working. And if you just want to compare it to the American economy overall, we're seeing the manufacturing come back ashore and all these different things because over the last quarter century, we realized that exporting, although it was cheaper to manufacture goods, it has its downsides as well. And I think our community exemplifies what those downsides are. If we send everything out, we don't have anything to build with. That's why our communities look so bad. We give all our bricks away. We need money to, you know, build our schools. We send all our tax dollars out because we shop where we can't live and where we can barely work unless it's for less than minimum wage, all right? But at the end of the day, if we have, if we're being clear and honest about our community, no one's making us make decisions. We can look at how we're being manipulated and exploited and all, and that's, it's not wrong. But at the end of the day, we all make these decisions to go spend our dollars where we spend them, to neglect our neighborhoods, to neglect our community organizations, the NAACP, and all these other organizations, they are still around. They still exist. I still try to catch meetings every time that I can. So we're not lacking for intellectuals. We're not lacking for organizations. We're not even lacking funds because the Black community is a trillion-dollar community. It's just that dollar on the move, one direction, that's out, not in.
Mm.
All right? Yeah, you can blame it on rap music. You can blame it, and not saying it doesn't have a role, but we're compartmentalizing. Right, and say, oh, it's this, and then it's this. It's all of that as a collective, but it's also our individual choices that keep this going. If we don't want our kids to listen to rap music, yo, unplug the internet. Don't pay the bill. Make them go so far out of their way to find this stuff that they don't want to do it. You know, if you give kids viable options, they turn into what they have. At least my parents aren't listening to me at home because they may be in a messed up situation, maybe drugs or whatever. This guy relates to me. I'm in the hood. He's in the hood. He may be in the hood. He may be rich, right? But he's relating to me. My teacher doesn't relate to me, right? They're not getting paid enough to want to do their job. My parents working three jobs. They're not even present. They're trying to keep the lights on. Who's relating to me? It's simple things, having mentors in our neighborhoods that could help. All of these things that it's fun to talk about, but we rarely see in action. As a community and for all of us, are we really getting out here and putting boots on the ground and investing our time in our community? And that's a question that all, particularly Black men, but all Black people in general have to ask. All right, we know what's not being done for our community or even to our community. What are we doing to our community, as he spoke to before?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Because he said, I know you said that parents are out here working three jobs, whatever the case is, but that's not a new situation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we were growing up, all of us were latchkey kids. We always had our key and went home and, you know, had to let ourselves in. So what is the difference of what happened when we were younger compared to now?
That very divisive. When you were younger, there was, yeah, you had the normal, the drug. I'm sure you had drugs when you were growing up in different areas and different things that, you know, would hinder you or take you off your path. And, you know, heroin's been around since 60s, 70s and max. And then crack in the 80s and then the pills in 2000s. We put all our kids on methamphetamine as to control their behavior and all of those different things. But now, one, access to technology. And I think nowadays when you were growing up, you were a kid, right? You had parents that taught you things. You had a community that coalesced around you and taught you things and showed you the way of life for the most part. But not everybody. I mean, I get it. You know, a single-parent household. But now you have kids that have access to any piece of information that they want. That automatically makes them young adults. So they may be kids in age, but they're growing up in real-life situations, and they have access to all information. So a lot of the times the people that are trying to influence them and talk to them, one, aren't even aware of their life and how it's operating, but aren't as knowledgeable as them. And sometimes, and I even find it myself, and I'm not even that far removed from the younger generation, I'm bringing them antique information or old information, because now information is evolving so fast. A generation used to be 30 years. It's now 5 to 10. You know, so things are turning over much faster, and we think we're keeping up, and we think the times are the same, but it's the threats are, it's a larger quantity of threats out here. And they, our kids can be reached. Like he said, those people are conditioning your kids before they put their feet on the ground because they can go in through your Wi-Fi. When you are a latchkey kid and you went in your house, you were safe in your house because there was no one else there.
Mm.
Now anybody can be in your house virtually through audio and all that. So that's the main difference. The influence, the sphere of influence is very diverse. It's very, very smart. And that's really the difference. You had a community around you. Even if they weren't there every day saying, hey, this is how you play marbles, this is how you brush your hair, whatever. You had a group of people around you that if they saw you doing wrong, they can communicate with you, they can pull up on you, they can, you know, chop it up and have a conversation. But now our kids are alienated. They're living in silos outside of them and their friends. And so that's the major difference, the communication barrier, the technological barrier, because if I'm being honest, I sit in rooms all day with older African Americans who don't know how to work technology. So those older Americans cannot sit there and tell me, I have to show them you can't work technology, that you have a clear way of communicating with kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's their main source of communication, all right? Mm-hmm. So part of that is, you know, that's the difference. But here's what we can do. Either the older generations who have the values, the morals, right, and all these things that we need back in our community, either you guys come back or upgrade on your technological abilities, right, and go back to meet the kids where they are. Really, that's really it, because we can't expect them to step up to our level. We're experienced. We have been out here in this world. So we may have to pivot, go back, and get our youth and bring them with us. But it's just a difference in communication style, access to information, lack of structure. When you were growing up, you knew that as a latchkey kid, when you went in the house, if you left that house, if you did anything that wasn't on the list of things you could do, you had to answer to your parents, right or wrong, for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah. Now we don't have that discipline in the home. We don't have those expectations in the home.
That's what I wanted to get to about Brother James was talking about earlier. He was saying that, you know, how do we teach the kids the necessary things that they need to know? And it's kind of hard to teach a child something when a parent is out there doing those things also. So you're talking about social media and all that other stuff. You got the parents on social media that everything they do is social media. So it's kind of hard to get them away from it when that's what mom and daddy does. So, you know, how do we reach them? And I think at this point, we have to start reaching some of the parents because the children seem like they're so far gone. I don't think they even realize the things that's going on. And to point out something that you said, they are smarter now. Or they have a lot of information, but they don't seem like they're as smart as they used to be because they don't have to work for it. So because they don't have to work for it, they know if I just go on my phone or I go on my computer, I can find out about it. So I don't have to know. It's not even important to me.
And I completely understand. When we compare that to other communities, we look at the technology as killing our kids, but it's propelling kids in other communities. They're using that as a foundation to go create, to go and, you know, do different things, make money. Yeah. And so it goes back to, you know, how do we put our well-to-do and those that are concerned about our community, how do we put them in the spaces where they can be seen on social media or in the places where the kids' attention are? You know, they're not going to wake up tomorrow and say, I'm going to do right. We have to pull them out of this cycle, and we have to help them unlearn and relearn information. They have to unlearn bad habits and relearn great habits. But they're not going to just willfully do this. Now, you will have a handful of kids that will look around and say, I don't know what I want or where I can go or what I can get, but I know I don't want this. I'm going to figure it out. If I got to work at McDonald's, to work at Target, to get that degree, to go wherever. You see it all the time. But we're talking about on a mass scale. It has to be a change of culture all the way around. And that's going to start with people like you that are sitting in the room. This is not the kids' responsibility. They were born into this world. They did not create it. So we can't look at them and say, you guys do this and you behave like this and we can't reach you because you like this. Whose fault is that? All right. Kids have been born every generation, and they all turn out different based on the environment that they grew from. We, post-civil rights, once we saw our, you know, leaders murdered in broad day on TV, we stopped having those leaders that stepped up and did it. In my opinion, the last one we had that was really like that was Tupac. But even he was pulled aside by gangster rap and ended up costing him his life. And I think seeing that has traumatized our community for half a century, and we don't have the leaders like we used to. Nobody wants to die for the cause or for our people. And rightfully so, because you look at the Malcolm X's and the Martin Luther King's, and then you look at what Black America is now, a zero net, wealth, zero net wealth by 2048. We've been going backwards since then, all right? We don't own much. We don't own, we talk about, you know, music and television and all of that. Byron Scott just tried to buy back BET, and it didn't work out. So we're trying to get control of some of the channels and some of the media that has been brainwashing our communities for years. But, you know, it's been backwards ever since we lost a lot of those icons. So who will be next to step up and be fearless and say, no, this is the Black community, this is what we need, this is what we need to get these, you know, people in the room, this is what's wrong. Who's going to be that person that takes charge? We don't have that for them.
Well, give me one second. You're listening live to African American Empowerment Saturday, 845-277-9250. We're having a grassroots discussion on the needs, a community needs assessment for African Americans. But also, let's think about what we can do individually and collectively. I'll throw this in. We're buying the phones. We're buying the Xboxes. And we're putting these things in front of our kids. We are, right? So all of the devices we're buying. So it's really our responsibility to teach our children how to manage those. Like you said, brother, in certain communities, they're using it as effective tools. What about us? So I'm going to turn it over to Brother James, and then we're going to go to Slido, and then we'll go to the lines as well.
I'd just like to add also, too, as well, that at times, too, I want us to be careful because there are a lot of youth in our communities that are actually doing well. When we look at here in the city of Richmond, we average between 21 to 23 or 24 poverty rate that it fluctuates from time to time. Being an individual who focuses on poverty reduction every day for the city, So what I see is a small percentage of our youth that are so violent, creating so much crime that it kind of makes it look like these neighborhoods are really bad. But we have a lot of good youth that's in these environments. Also, being an individual that come out of the street, there is a hard truth that we have to talk about, and that is everybody's not going to make it. Some are going to go to prison. Some are going to die. When you sign up for the street culture, most of us know what we sign up for. That's why it's a no-snitch culture. You're going to jail or you're going to possibly die, right? And that comes with it, too, as well. But I want to talk more about having opportunities that are low-hanging fruit for youth that want to do well and focusing on those youth. Because when we look at services, we spend a lot of time trying to convince individuals who don't want it that they need to get it. A lot of resources, meaning like social services and things like that, go towards individuals who sometimes are just stuck on these systems and not trying to get ahead. But there are some individuals that really need these resources too as well that are the working poor that get out, work a job every day, but still aren't making enough income to be able to support themselves because of the cost of living and so on around Richmond. When we look at our workforce centers, being an individual who I hire directly out of the neighborhoods, we plan to strategize on how to train our people, how to attack the mentality inside of our individuals that are in these communities, but also how do we use our voices to leverage resources and stuff from elected officials, government, and so on. Brother Marv and Brother George work every day with me at trying to do this with our people. As community members, we leverage dollars from the city of Richmond to be able to employ our people, but also be the change that we must be inside of these communities as well. So I do want to make sure that when we do talk about our youth, to be clear, a lot of our youth are excelling. A lot of our youth want things. A lot of our youth wants the opportunity. But it is a small population that are doing so much in our communities that it makes it seem like our communities are really, really violent and don't want change. But when I talk to most of the youth, most of them ask me more for jobs than the adults do. And that's it shows every day when we out there on the ground, why y'all don't have no jobs for us? So a lot of the youth really want it. But that's why I talk to a specific area about that street culture. That street culture is a major issue inside of our communities. It is. We got to deal with that. Being a guy that walked away from that street culture and understanding that the biggest problem in my community was an awakening moment for my actual life. So I do want to pass it back to Brother Marvin, but I do want everyone out there to find ways to empower the low-hanging fruit, for lack of a better word, that are youth that really want it and youth that want the opportunity and youth that are currently seeking jobs or working. How can we help them get to the next level? You need resources to contact, a place to call for your youth, call 804-646-6464. We can do everything from CDL to nursing school, CNA, PCA, MedTech, all of that for free. We got heavy equipment operator trainings. You name it, we can do it. Electrician, HVAC, plumber, all of that stuff. You can get it for free. As long as you are a resident here in the city of Richmond, you qualify. There are also programs that are going on right now to help our youth get connected to Internet inside of our communities, where you can take free trainings online too as well through Richmond Public Library and so on and so on. I also want all of the parents and things that are out there to really pay attention to these Diamond District deals and these stuff with these casinos. If this stuff do go through, get your youth ready for some opportunity to be able to get a job. Those who are 18, fresh out of high school, if you're not going to, you know, college, sign them up for trade school so they can get access. There are a lot of programs out there that they can get connected to, that'll help them to get in line for a lot of these jobs that are coming. Now, our Latino brothers and sisters are on the job sites. It has to be more of us to get on those job sites, because if you look at the code books are now in Spanish. That tells you something. But at the end of the day, like the brother said, the accountability starts with us. So right now I'm looking at all of these black males that are inside of these communities, because at the end of the day, that's us in there destroying those communities. That's us selling the drugs, trapping out of the females' houses, doing all of this stuff inside of these neighborhoods. We have to stand up and be more accountable for what we see, because a lot of times when we look at these neighborhoods, that ain't the white man that's in there that's doing it. It's people that look just like us. That ain't the white man that's burning them in them grounds. It's people that look just like us. most of our communities here in the city of Richmond, we have six major communities that are all mostly female head of household. Where the guys at? What are we doing? Right? Are we just tripping on the front porch? What are you going to do? You selling drugs, you're going to get her and her kid kicked out of her house? We got to break that mentality because the game is bigger than just us making money. So I push strongly at males in our communities that we have to be the image that these younger guys see. Now, I am a black male. I don't, you know, knock what nobody else is doing, but I do not know what's right for young girls. I do not know. I know Maslow hierarchy needs food, shelter, roof over the head. I know those things, but I do not know the plight of what our young sisters are dealing with. So I try to focus more on young males. And I think that in our communities and in this work, because the brother touched on our people being a commodity, there is a lot of poverty pimping that goes on in the city of Richmond. There are individuals who come to our community for our social security numbers and our stories after grants. We have to watch that. You know, I'm not saying that they don't know what they're doing, but I'm saying that we should have the opportunity to do it as well. But we got to also make sure that when our organizations get access to funding, we document well, we have our paperwork right, we turn in our stuff on time, and we do what we have now. Because when we start to have these kind of conversations, we're talking about taking money out of people's pocket. There's a good old boy system that exists, and people are getting paid. And it is a very, very serious system. And our people are the commodity. We have a term that we've coined. We call it poverty pimping. It is going on at an alarming rate here in the city of Richmond. But guess what? If we don't have the programs and we're not in there doing it ourselves, how can we complain about what someone else is doing? So we have to look at ourselves. And to the brother's point, it does take us to change us, but I really do appreciate having this room for us to come in and have this dialogue and start to have these conversations because it's really important. But also, as the sister asked the question, she asked about things that we can do with these kids that even, excuse me, some of the parents are particularly participating in the activities. I am one that's starting to look at what does it look like catching them straight out of high school. As a person that has employed youth, about 50, 60 of them at a time, I do not like dealing with their parents at times because that can be some of the issues. So once they hit that 18 years old and they can start to make their own decisions, that's when I kind of want to get my hands around them, because when we look at it, it's like we go through high school and then we drop them. And just before I pass the mic, let me give you this one thing for particularly young males. We put them on the football field, a sports field. We tell them, man up, be tough, be strong, right? You can't cry. We put them through these sports for this many years. We let them participate and compete. But then what happens? Once they get about 12 or 13 years old, we cut them off when they can't keep up academically, meaning they go to high school, they may not be the best, they don't get to play sports no more. So we have taught them aggression and competition their whole life to get to about 13 years old to cut them off and say we don't have nothing else for them. Okay, well, what are we going to do with that energy? And so I really want to look at talking to more of the coaches to say, okay, you got access to have all of these young males out here on this field. How many books are they reading while they're out there? How are you teaching them laws? Are you teaching them about how government works and things like that? And I really want to do a better job myself of getting out there with the coaches to really do it too as well, because I think sometimes we find our coaches as well living their dreams through some of these kids. And it's not a bad thing because I'm not going to knock sports, but I think that we can do a better job at giving them books and stuff like that while they're out there too as well. And one of the sisters wanted to make a comment, so I'll pass it over to her.
Well, I don't have a comment. I just have a question for you.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
So in reference to that training program that you had, what ages does it go up to? You said they want the CDL, or they want CNA, whatever the case is for those programs. You said they have to be in the city. You said they have to be in the city of Richmond. And what's the age group that you help?
Yes, ma'am. They have to be in the city of Richmond, and the program starts at 18. We have different programs that start when they're in high school as well. But, you know, when you're dealing with high school age kids, you're going to kind of compete with funding for tech centers and stuff like that. So it gets real challenging when you're trying to go out the grants. But 18 years old, city resident, they can go down to the Workforce Center. They can get resources. But one of the key things about the Workforce Center is consistency. You have to be consistent because nothing is going to happen overnight. And then you have to want it as well, because me being an individual who came through the Workforce Center from being incarcerated and is now why I do the work, because I found out how the program works. I'm like, this is dope. We got to get more people involved with the program. Consistency was key. But you also have to be sick and tired of being sick and tired as well. I was sick and tired from using drugs and running the streets and being a demonic force to be used out there in the streets. So until I got that understanding within me, could nobody even talk to me because I wouldn't have been able to hear you. You know what I mean? Because at the time, I believed that I was possessed by something. I was possessed by that world and them drugs that I was using because I was rocked to sleep for many years. And so to your point, the workforce centers are key. We got to get more people inside of those centers. But also, the more people we get inside of those centers, the more the workforce center can show their numbers. So when they go to ask for more dollars to fund programs, now they can produce the numbers.
So adults can go in there also.
Yes, adults can go in.
That's what I wanted to also bring up. So we, all of us know some adults out here that need to go that a little bit further. They don't know any different. They don't know what those resources out there. So that's what I was wondering. What are the age from 18 and up? So it's not like just the youth. It is for adults.
Yes, it's specific to the adults. The youth, they have things around like the Mayor Youth Academy and stuff like that, which those programs can be a lot better. But I think in due time they will. But for that particular program I'm speaking about, it is adults. But one thing I like it. It still has to be in the person,
right?
It has to be in the person because when we look at services, people are being burnt out because people are working systems. So you may be a career advisor for somebody and spend 6 months trying to get a person just to find a job. That's going to burn you out if you got 10 people on your caseload. And so we're seeing social services workers with 500-600 people on their caseload being underpaid. We're seeing that in the school systems as well. At some point in time, we got to shake the trees and those ain't going to make it. They just ain't going to make it and focus on those that really want it. Because I say it all the time, as even when we look at programs, look at all of the individuals who are the working poor. They're already out there working a job every day. They just need a better one and some more training to get something
right.
Different.
Exactly.
But we spend so much time on individuals who would tell you how to help them. And I deal with it all day long. Like, how do you tell me how to – okay, I see what this is because that's thinking. So even as Mr. Brother George and Brother Marvin, Brother Marvin is a mental health professional working with my team every morning. So they have to sit down with him because he's got to attack the mind. Because we can tear the neighborhoods down, but if we don't attack the mind, we still get the same result. So he works with their mind every morning to break that stinking thinking. Some of them hate it, but guess what? I hear the comments you make that mean that stinking thinking is still in there. That's important. And I'm not going to burn him out with a bunch of individuals that don't want it. But look at our social service system. Look at our school system and all that. You got people that will show up and fight these teachers over their kid acting up in the school system. So now what is that teacher supposed to do with that? Because now they're not teaching them, well, you'll come in here and fight one of them if they try to correct your child. We got to pick our battles wisely, but also – a hard truth for me, and I tell it to everybody, just because you're black don't make you my people. And I'm serious about that. Because if you want to be in the neighborhood and you're putting bullets in people that look just like me, you're part of the problem. But I first had to look in the mirror. I was a part of the problem. I was poisoning people for a living. I was destroying my community. I was dating many women, womenizing, trapping in and out of their houses because I was conditioned. I was told that's what being a real nigga was. So that's what a real nigga is, that? That's foolishness. But that's what we're conditioned because of the music, the culture, and all of that. And that's why I have tough conversations with guys that are still in the game that are street niggas. Well, let's be real. What are we? We're a little problem in our neighborhood. But then we say our women are, oh, they real masculine. Yeah, well, look what we're doing to them. All right, look at what we're doing in our communities. Are we being the leaders we need to be? Are we talking and having conversations with these children? Are we standing up at times when they're doing wrong? Somebody done shot this person's house up. Is you going to tell who did it? No, you're not going to do that, right? You see that lady carrying her bangs, you can go out there and get it. We lost a lot of that because a lot of our culture stopped listening to our elders too for guidance. We think we know it all right now, and that's the real. But a lot of our elders have information that we can get from them that they want to give to us, but we got to be intentional about sitting down with them to hear them. But, you know, the young brother said about the technology and stuff like that, he's correct, but some of them don't know that, right? So are you intentional about going over to their house to hear what they got to say? Are you intentional with sitting down with them? I was a victim of not doing that. I knew it all. I got a little taste of myself, got a little, I know it all, but I really didn't know it all. Well, that too, we got parents that do that. But even when I look at it at the end of the day, a lot of our problems right now in our community is stemming from the street.
I cannot get away from the street culture, because that's what's filling the prison cells and that's what's filling the graveyard. So the first thing I'm looking at is how can we stop them from dying and how can we stop them from going to prison? I can work on some of the other stuff, but those two things right there, those of us that have been locked up, those of us that have seen people die, serious. I've lost 18 friends to murder, seen 7 killed. I've been watching people die since I was 12. So this our whole life. We've been seeing this cycle, so unfortunately you become numb to it, and that's why they kill so fast, because they normalize death. You see kids in the neighborhood, somebody gets shot, they duck, you get hit, and they're back to playing again. Right? It's almost like a soldier that's at war. When he first get off that plane in Afghanistan somewhere, the bombs go off, he's ducking. But after about 2 months of being over there, he look around, all right, keep shooting again, because you have now normalized it. So what has turned off in our people that we don't realize we're living in danger? You know, and those are the kind of things that we do. And even with Brother Marvin, we have cracked the code even to RHA to deal with the cliff effect. Because when you take residents that are living inside of RHA, you give them a job, their rent goes up, benefits drop down, right? So we've cracked that code per hood guidelines and realized that we got residents in a training program that can't qualify the income as income. So now we got team members that work with us right now, nobody making under $20 an hour, they don't have to report that income. And now that's how we're starting to help them move out of RHA, because now they can save up some money. But at the minute I get a job, you take my benefits and raise my rent, how am I going to get out there? I got to pay 2 times the rent to go. Got to pay the rent while I'm here. You're talking about the average house right now in the city of Richmond, $1,500, $1,600 for 690 square feet. And I talk to the men, all those other individuals often, and I say, well, all of these buildings are being built and stuff like that, but where are the locals moving in them? We're not getting access to them. Where are the jobs? Right? And so that's why when we even look at our team members, we have created an apprenticeship program where they can actually get a journeyman's card in workforce development, community members. What that does is it helps you compete if you don't have a college degree. So now when you look at most jobs, they say college degree or related time in the field. So we're helping community members get the related time in the field, and we're helping them get the related instruction. So now it helps them to compete for the job, because I think that education is important, but lived experience is important too as well, because we got a lot of educated individuals that shouldn't be in certain jobs. Got a lot of educated people that do well, though. So it's what, you know what I mean? But I do want to see more people with lived experience in the work, because I believe that that can somewhat give it more balance. But I also think that when we look at everywhere, there's a work culture that's getting ready to retire. Who's getting ready to step up to do this work? This is very dangerous times that we're in, because we don't have people graduating as social workers and teachers at the rate that we used to have it. So what's getting ready to happen with our community? And that's something that me really, really worries me, and why I'm trying to figure out ways to get people to change policies and procedures to take degrees off the table, because that stuff has been going on for 40 or 50 years, which it was a good system at that time, but now times have changed, and we need to find the talent to work in these social services and so on. Look, the city has a hard time recruiting. You're talking about even Sheriff Irvin in the jail. She's probably down 140 people. You teachers are down. Human service people are down all over the place. So as we have these conversations, how can we leverage our voices to talk about policy change at a state level? Like you just seen at a state level, they took college degrees off the table for state jobs, which Maryland did it first. But how at the city level now can we look at some of those things too as well? Because I'm not going to say that you don't need education. I would never say that. But some jobs, you can kind of get training and do that. You can get training and do that. You know what I mean? And also, too, those who have the education, understand, too, that be voices and advocate for those who are locked out of the work. Because me, you know, we leverage $6 million from the city right now. We doing $1 million a year in income to help with residents. Brother George is one of the supervisors. But even as a person that's done all this work, it's only so far I could go because I don't have a degree. So I'm watching myself get denied jobs and opportunities, which I could do well, but I don't have the paperwork for HR. But I'm kind of somewhat, you know, giving people with the degrees and stuff a run for their money. And they're coming to me asking me how to fix stuff. But because I don't have the paperwork, they're saying, oh, we like you, you're good, but you ain't got the paperwork. And so how do we challenge that as people? You know, how do we use our voices? Because a lot of those youth that's coming behind us, maybe they will get into that field if they can get a feel for the field first. Meaning, how can I put you in your neighborhood and show you what it feels like to help your people? When we put people out there, so many people
work-based learning.
Correct.
Very strong on the counties. And they have a robust system set up that takes them from eighth grade all the way through. And those in the counties, kids are graduating with associate's degrees. They can up their class loads in high school and basically come out hireable and STEM fields, whatever. And so the model is there. It's how do you get it implemented in Richmond? Richmond has technical schools, too. That's where a lot of the CT is being run through. So what is the difference, in your opinion, between how the counties are doing it and what's happening in the city? Because, I mean, it's rolling. Regency Mall, for those who are familiar, they just opened a whole new adult education center. They have a financial empowerment center, bond secures in there, Ford, all of the first responders, and a number of other people. It's this massive facility that they reimagined in the mall. What's stopping that from happening in Richmond? And I have a few other points. You were on it, but I'll let you answer this question.
Well, to be clear, I can't speak directly on behalf of the higher-ups of the city or anything like that. But I think part of it is what's happening in the city is designed to get us up out of here. I mean, our neighborhoods are being gentrified, resources are – when you look at those areas, all right, like center you just mentioned, that's not the East End part of Henrico. It's a big difference, Regency and the East End part of Henrico. That's two different demographics between Hermitage and Highland Springs. That's two, you know what I mean? So I think we're seeing some of the same issues because of the flight that's happening with individuals being forced out of the city to those environments.
Let me be accurate in that, because Highland Springs has a specialty center that's built into it, and all Henrico high schools have access to the CTE program. Although Regency Mall isn't located in eastern Henrico, that program is for the whole county. You're just a little bit further out as far as proximity. So, but you still have access as a Highland Springs student. The question I think there is, once that center is up and running, or if you just go back to the beginning of CTE in the county and you look at the numbers, and we need to go back and see where's the participation coming from, and if it is indeed higher participation in the western part of the county than the east, then why is that? It's not proximity location, because there's school buses that take people to different places. And I think public transportation will get you over there, too. That shouldn't have to be the way for our kids all the time, but it's not roped off, so to speak. All right. So I think some more data has to come out about that. But those programs in Chesterfield and Henrico are countywide. And so when you think about the city, which is only 66 square miles, right, you don't have to go that far to get to Richmond Tech. How can we collaborate or shadow or see what's working for those programs and why, and then adopt that in Richmond? Because we have the facilities, and especially over the next 5 years, we're going to have the funds, and we advocate to have those funds put back into our communities. How do we get it up to par with the localities around us is the question. And I think you guys are already doing the work by, you know, transforming your communities and working, but why isn't what you're doing tethered to Richmond Technical Centers and CTE programming in the city?
So I think one thing that I've noticed is when you talk about, like, Chesterfield and Henrico, they have more tax dollars, right, that are coming from stuff. When you look at the city of Richmond is landlocked. But one thing that really hurts the city of Richmond is all of the state buildings and VCU buildings are counted by the government, but the city doesn't get taxes for that. So you have VCU owning all this property that the city gets no tax dollars from. You also have all of those state buildings and stuff like that that's in the city of Richmond that the city gets no taxes from. That's going to hit you real hard of having that much space taken up and can't pull taxes on any of those things. That's why at times I believe, I can't say for sure, but I believe that's why at times they try to come up with ways to raise tax dollars, hence Navy Hill, hence casinos, hence whatever it may be. It's because of that, right? A lot of people come into the city of Richmond to work, but then they flee and go into counties to live. You got a lot of individuals that have rental properties. You know, home ownership as well, all of that stuff plays a major part. I can't say that that's the reason why the programs aren't the way they are. But also, too, I think that the city of Richmond and RPS, the relationship ain't as good as it could be. You know, I think that relationship has some strain on it, too, as well, because a lot of stuff not even with the city and RPS, but even with nonprofits. A lot of people work in sectors, like they're separate, like they're over here doing this over here. So we duplicate a lot of services, meaning it might be 10 people that say they're doing the same exact thing. Instead of us working together every year, you see a new organization popping up saying they do so. We're not kind of working together. But also, to your point, one major thing that I see is we don't show up to voice our voices. How many of our people show up to city council meetings and talk about this kind of stuff? They're not there, right? When you look at other localities, those people are going to show up to those meetings and voice their concerns about their kids and so on and so on. Not saying that we don't do it here in Richmond, but it's not a strong force showing up in city council saying that this is what we want and so on and so on.
So I want to wrap this up today, right? Thank you all for joining. It's been a great conversation, lots to think about. And I want you, as you listen and ponder the conversation, how can you get involved? Right? Think about how you can advocate for change, what you can do to make a difference right where you are. If that's investing in mentorship, if that's being able to share your time or your talent or your treasure, how can you get involved to change the mindset? What can you do right at home? And then what can you do within yourself to make a difference right where you are? So the empowerment begins with you. The work begins with you. The strategy and the change begins with you. And as we do that, then we coalesce and we come together. And we continue to advocate for change within our community through changing policy and those things that we know need to happen on a daily, regular, and consistent basis. But again, it has to start with each and every one of us, wherever we are, of doing the work of working on ourselves. So we got about 3 minutes left, and we're going to close it down. But I want to see if we can get a couple of final comments before we get out of here. I'll start with Brother James, then I go to Brother Antonio.
I'd just like to say I thank you all for having me here today. Anybody that's willing to sit down at the table with me so we can try to figure it out, because I don't have all the answers by far. I need help as well as can help other individuals, but I'm just willing to sit down and put our heads together to see what we can come up with and then go towards it. I'm not one to just like to talk about problems. I want to talk about solutions and work towards trying to make some change, so I'm here. And I need help too as well, so anyone that can help me think through things and how I can do a better job and be the best I can for my community, I'm open for all comments. I'm open for criticism. I'm open for anything you got for me. Just give me something. Thank you.
Just two things. I think when it comes to the black community, we have to really go back, and not to sound cliche or hallmark, but we have to protect our most precious resource, and that's black women.
Hmm.
If you can't protect the black woman, I wouldn't give you $1 billion. You're going to blow that too. So, you know, you have a resource that reproduces and also produces your environment. There wouldn't be a black America left if it wasn't for black women. We would have killed each other by now and it would be done. All right? Another thing is, and it's a dirty little secret, and many that I've said this to probably don't agree, but there's two black Americas, and we have to accept that duality and come to grips with that realization. There's a black America that's sitting here, and we want to see us as a collective move forward and be better, and there's a black America that is wholly unaware of everything. And we have to come together, and that's got to happen one or two ways. You can either do it through collision or collaboration. But either way, you got to come together. In order to fight with you, I have to engage you. In order to collab with you, I have to engage you. I think holistically, as a group, we have to decide a path and go down it. Either we got to take ourselves a task, or we got to bring ourselves in, love on us, and build ourselves back up. But we can't afford to stay still. We have to pivot, and immediately.
All right, I got an amen from over there. All right, so we have to do the work again of thinking about strategies that will really work. All right? As we continue to build, let's continue to do that work of building ourselves from the inside out, right? Internally, looking at what you need to do individually to get yourself straight first, and that we can continue to go out and do this work of building ourselves and then building our community. It's a great job that we can do if we want to do the work, but we have to identify the work that needs to be done. We also need to do that work of working on ourselves. It is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's been African American Empowerment Saturday, and our mission is to empower African Americans with information, knowledge that support, inspire, motivate, and empower each one of us. So until next week, I know we didn't get to the lines this week, so don't be mad with me.
just be glad with me. Until next week, let's continue to be positive, peaceful, and productive. And as always, oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. Thank you for listening. Next week, peace and blessings.